guys. Welcome back. Again, you're listening to Money Talks. This next segment, what we want to do is what we typically do, go into a case study. In this case, listeners heard us say many times, keep the money you will need within the next 10 years in fixed income investments held to maturity to protect principal. And he's puzzled as to the rationale, feels that it's a guaranteed way to lose principal in terms of purchasing power. It would take $1.20 today to have the same purchasing power as $1 in 2006. And Jarrett, why don't you take us away into this case study?
Yeah, you know what? It is a very valid concern that we get from a lot of clients because let me just say that the basis and sort of the foundation of our investment philosophy at Hensler Financial is what we refer to as a 10-year rule, which I'm sure as many of you longtime listeners have heard us talk about before. And really what that means at the very foundation of it is that any money we believe you can foreseeably need in the next 10 years should not be subjected to the stock market. That money should be invested in fixed income investments that have a maturity date that will be coming available when you need the money, or at least for when we can foreseeably see that you would need the money based on typically cash flow projections that we run for our clients.
Now, right. You don't want to take the volatility, the risk of the stock market. You need to be sure that
exactly.
Your principal is protected.
We're eliminating the possibility of you needing to sell securities in a down market by holding that long of a maturity date on a fixed income. Now, right now, because of the rising interest rate environment, we aren't necessarily going out 10 years on the yield curve and holding a 10-year maturity fixed income instrument. But again, the basis of it is that any money that you need in 10 years should not be invested in the market. It should be invested in fixed income securities. Any money beyond that, beyond the 10 years, we do feel comfortable subjecting to the stock market or mutual funds that invest in stocks because that is money that we believe should be invested in that manner so that it can earn a growth rate high enough to offset what you're spending. Because, you know, as this question alludes to, look, there is going to be some depletion of assets because you're spending it. I mean,
right.
It needs to be there. It needs to be maturing when you need it so that you have it to spend from. And so it's important that you've got really the way we view it is there's two buckets. There's your fixed income bucket. There is your growth bucket. That fixed income bucket is there for your spending needs so that, God forbid, we see another 2008 come along. You won't be forced to sell a stock before you would want to because of, as everyone knows, the prices of stocks at that time had fell drastically.
And you think about that, individuals who didn't have the 10-year rule in place and had all their money in equity markets, if you needed that money, you had no choice but to sell out at the absolute bottom of the market. And look what's happened since then, since the bottom of the market in 2009.
Absolutely.
The market's come back, what, 60%, I think you said earlier.
Yeah, yeah. If you looked at the Dow Jones between December 29th of 2006 and the close of market yesterday, it was up right at about 60%. So, you know, it's important that you remain invested and aren't forced to time the market like that, because that's effectively what you're doing if you're forcing yourself to have to sell a stock to get the money you need by not having money set aside, which is the whole intent of our 10-year rule. Again, we want to make sure that money is there when you need it, because our biggest fear for a client would be for them to call us up and say, I need money, and we'd be forced to sell a stock to get it to them. That is the ultimate goal of the 10-year rule. And the beauty of it is that we just saw it work extremely well during that time that you just mentioned, Nick, this most recent financial crisis, which was the worst economic period since the Great Depression. So, you know, we saw it work well through there. And in theory, of course, it wasn't around at the time, but in theory, this 10-year rule would have navigated a client through the Great Depression in that they would have had the money they needed to spend or live off of for that entire period without being forced to sell a stock in such a depressed market. And that, again, is the goal of the 10-year rule, is to give you the flexibility and choice of being able to sell an investment, particularly a stock investment, when you need it. And I know you guys have done a lot more, most of the research that we rely on as far as some of this goes, but between 1926 and I guess probably in one of the recent years, it's been very recently, in looking at those time periods, there's only a couple of 10-year periods over any course or any of the 10-year periods you look at over that time frame that would have seen a lower stock price than, you know, what it otherwise would have. So
yeah, rolling 10-year periods, equities tend to end up higher.
Yeah, I think you're looking at the late 90s and the mid 60s
yeah.
are the only
yeah,
time
exactly, yeah.
in
yeah.
that entire period. And I think it's really powerful what you said, because you're talking about the worst crisis since the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
Yet you're still saying you go back to 2006.
Right.
You got a 60% return there.
That's
and
right.
I think that's kind of the reasoning behind the 10-year rule, in that the economy does experience cycles. The asset markets do experience cycles.
Yes.
If you're able to go out that 10 years,
mm-hmm.
you'll be outside of that cycle. So you might be catching it early in the cycle and
right.
then experience that whole cycle and then catch it again early in the cycle.
Sure.
Absolutely. It is important. I mean, that's how we navigate the clients, in our opinion, successfully through those times, because we know they've got the money that they need, at least foreseeably so anyways. Again, we run projections that help us determine a client's liquidity needs, which then gives us the information we need to determine what should not go into the stock market and what needs to be held or set aside for fixed income.
Sure. And one thing that was mentioned here, Jared, and you and I talked about it earlier, and you gave a good example, if you'll repeat it. The listener said he feels that it's a guaranteed way to lose principal in terms of purchasing power, and he's puzzled by the rationale. And I know you have kind of a back-of-the-envelope example.
Yeah, and so to answer that question, to keep the math very simple and to give a good example here of how this works in reality, okay, let's say you've got $1 million portfolio and that your liquidity needs over the course of 10 years were equivalent to $300,000. That would mean, in our view, that $300,000 would need to be set aside and invested in fixed income, and then the remaining $700,000 could then be invested into individual stocks or mutual funds that invest in stocks, growth investments as we know them. Okay. Over the course of the past 10 years, had you done that, not even considering any type of interest or return that you would have gotten in the fixed income realm, but just looking at the stock market, you would have seen a 60% return, as we mentioned. It was 19.7%. That was the inflation over that time. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was a 60% return over that time period, okay? And on $700,000, that would have been equivalent to about $420,000. If you were to reduce it by the 19.7%, which is the real inflation, yeah, over that same time, you'd still be looking at about a 40% return over the past 10 years. And on $700,000, that's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $280,000. So just in the growth investments alone, the appreciation of those would have almost offset what you had put into fixed income to live off of, so that you could ensure you had the money when you needed it.
And as you mentioned, what that completely ignores is the fact that the whole time you're in these bonds, these ladder bonds, you're earning interest on that. It's not right. like you're literally sitting in cash, owning nothing, watching that money just diminish with inflation.
Right.
You're actually earning a positive return on that. And that's just on the income. If you actually look at the total return on government bonds from 2006 to 2015, it's 6.4%.
Right.
I mean, obviously, only about 75% of that is income.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to consider both sides of the equation.
So it makes the point then that if you were to add that, it would hopefully pick up for that $20,000 shortfall in what you would have given up over that same time by having the money in fixed income. It's our view is that if we can set aside the money you need in fixed income so that it's there when you need it, if we can then use the growth investments, the other portion of the portfolio, to offset what you're spending, if that's as good as we ever do, then that's great, because that means you're in a place where you can live off of your portfolio and not ever eat into the principal. Granted, as he's looking at it, yeah, he is eating into some of the principal because he's effectively living off of that money and eating into that. But because he's getting a return on the growth portion,
right?
You know, he's able to offset that. Yeah, so sort of as an example of how that worked during this most recent recession and financial crisis, you know, let's go back to 2007. Markets were at all-time highs, and we've got a client that is following our 10-year rule perfectly. They've got 10 years' worth of their liquidity needs set aside in fixed income investments. Everything else is in growth investments or stocks to be, you know, working to offset what is needed to spend. Now, if that were the case, presuming that were the case, 08 comes along, the markets fall some, you know, 50%+. As long as they're holding those fixed income investments to maturity, then they don't have to worry about not having the money that they need or expected to have when they need it, because those investments, assuming they don't default, which we don't, you know, we're looking at the highest quality fixed income investments when we buy them, so typically we won't see that. But assuming they were able to mature, then they had the money they need during that time, and that person in this example was not forced to sell any of their stock holdings or growth investments during that time. Now, if they had the 10 years worth and we didn't want to sell any growth investments or stocks at depressed prices, we waited, would have waited in this example, to 2013 when markets returned to normal levels, and the client would have been able to sell some of their stock investments or growth investments at, you know, a price higher than what they paid for them. In which case, being able to wait out that downturn allowed them to wind down that 10 years to about 5 years worth of fixed income. So they still had five more years that they could have waited, but they didn't have to, because when 2013 came along, they were able to sell some of the growth investments since they were back at again, normal levels. They refilled that 10-year bucket, so to speak. So now
you're
they're
going
back at 10.
10 years back out again.
Right. Ideally, it's a rolling 10 years, and each year we sell for liquidity, assuming it makes sense to do so, so that a client always has 10 years. But when these downturns come, it's important that we rely on that fixed income bucket, so to speak, for the clients to live off of, and then wait for these expansionary periods to come back so that we see growth and can then sell those growth investments at prices in which we want to sell them or the client would want to sell them. And again, giving them the flexibility and the choice, because there's something to be said for that choice and option of when to sell the security versus being forced to sell one because you need the money. And you guys have said to us, I know you've given us some really good some excerpts that from research that you've done. One of them that's always stuck out to me and one that I talk to clients a lot about is those 10 worst days, or 10 best days, rather. You know,
from, just missing those 10 best days trying to time the market.
We saw one from 1994 to 2013. Had you been completely invested over that time, you would have seen about a 9.5% return, depending on how you were invested. Okay, but had you missed just the 10 best days over almost a two-decade period, you would have cut your returns in more than half. It would have been closer to 4% had you missed just 10 days. So you don't want to be trying to time the market and be in and out. And that's something else that the 10-year rule allows us to do, is eliminate any necessary, or what people would think is necessary, timing of the market in order to have the money that they need. They're not forced to do that if you've got these liquidity needs set aside. And so, look, as far as this listener's question is concerned, can you lose purchasing power? Certainly. I mean, you're spending the money that you set aside and ultimately depleting those assets, so you are losing some purchasing power. But between the time that those investments in fixed income are maturing and earning that interest, combined with the interest that hopefully your growth portion is earning, you should see a higher portfolio value at the end of that 10 years than what it, you know, was before, even after living off of it.
Right. And I think something else that definitely we should discuss here is we continue talking about buying these bond ladders, and you'll go out and you might just assume, well, what do I buy fixed income? Do I buy a bond fund? Do I buy a bond ETF? Do I buy bond CDs? I mean, that's a great question. And it really depends on what your needs are. First off, bottom line is we would recommend buying individual bonds because we want to know that cash flow at maturity. We buy and build these bond ladders with the expectation that you will hold each individual bond, CD, whether it's a municipal bond, whatnot, to maturity, because you will know that cash flow. Whereas if you buy a bond fund or a bond ETF, it's great that you're diversified. You have a diversified portfolio of bonds. But the problem is, when it comes time for you to sell, you don't know exactly what you're going to get at that time. Mm-hmm. You're much more sensitive to interest rate risk. Whereas I bought this, let's say, a $30,000 CD that matures in 2020. I know, and it's FDIC insured, I know that on that maturity date, I will get that $30,000. Ignore the fact that I've been earning interest that whole time. Mm-hmm. So kind of our bond buying philosophy is we only buy high quality municipal bonds, treasuries, CDs. Right now is kind of a weird time, as we all know, interest rates are still near record lows. And it's made it difficult to buy municipal bonds and get the yield we've historically gotten. We used to operate on anything over 5 years. If you're buying a municipal bond, you'd have to get a 5% tax equivalent yield. Mm-hmm. You just can't find that at our quality standards right now. We buy AA, AA2, or better bonds. And if you're looking for that in the market right now, things have gotten better with recent interest rate increases. I remember I bought probably a six-year bond a week ago, and you were getting close to 4%, not quite there. But for right now, keeping maturity short and eliminating some of that interest rate risk, we've been buying CDs. It really is right. Inside of 5 years. It's one of the most attractive investments, fixed income investments you can have. You can get a 5-year CD at, let's say, 2.25, 2.3%. Mm-hmm. And you know with certainty it's FDIC insured that money is going to be in your account.
Yeah. And there's a value on that liquidity, right?
I mean, absolutely.
Right. And I think the fact that it is laddered and you are limiting some of that reinvestment risk and duration it kind of tackles a little bit of what the listener's concern was as far as inflation goes, because the way I look at it, generally speaking, you're not going to get inflation without growth. I mean, we have had spurts of hyperinflation. Sure. You go back to the 80s and think about investing in bonds in the 80s. That part of your portfolio actually outperformed the growth portion. But basically what I'm saying is if the concern is inflation, we're going to build that ladder where you're able to roll as inflation comes into the market. Part of the reason that rates are so low right now is because we're not seeing inflation. As inflation comes in the market, bond yields will go up, and it's probably going to be driven by growth, so that equity portion of your portfolio should do well.
Better, yeah. And when we build these bond ladders, let's say we bought you a 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 year CD, right? That first one matures, we're going out another 5 years. So like you said, we're eliminating some of that reinvestment risk. And actually, you're doing better in times like now where your 1 year CD might have just come due, whereas when you bought it was yielding, let's say, 65 basis points. I can now reinvest in a 1 year CD at 1.15%. And we will just continue to roll that. And as interest rates continue to increase, you're going to get a higher and higher return on that laddered bond portfolio.
Well, and look, this strategy, I will say too, is one that we, for some clients, will amend slightly, following the same sort of direction as the 10-year rule. But because some clients see it as too conservative, they don't want to hold 10 years worth of liquidity in fixed income investments, especially given where interest rates are right now. Maybe we operate on sort of a 5 or a 7 year rule. Again, it's the same foundation in that we're holding that number of years of liquidity aside in fixed income investments so that you've got the money you need when you need it.
Right.
But you're not keeping quite as much. And frankly, that would have still navigated you through the financial crisis, because from 08 to 2013 was a 5 year span. Had you only had 5 years worth of liquidity over that time, you would have still been, in theory, almost, you know, okay, because you wouldn't still have had to sell stock until late 2012, 2013, before you were in need of more money that you didn't have in fixed income.
Sure.
If you were just operating on a 5-year rule. Some clients do that, and, you know, we would prefer it be 10, because this is a very conservative firm that, you know, we want to make sure we're being as conservative as possible as it relates to this. But, you know, the 10-year rule is sort of the foundation of it all.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hopefully this answers the listener's question. So we're looking forward to continuing this after the break. Don't touch that dial.
All material presented is compiled from sources believed to be reliable and current, but accuracy cannot be guaranteed. The contents are intended for general information purposes only. Information provided should not be the sole basis in making any decisions and is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified professional, such as a tax consultant, insurance advisor, or attorney. Although this material is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with respect to the subject matter, it may not apply in all situations. This is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell any financial instruments. It is not our intention to state, indicate, or imply in any manner that current or past results are indicative of future profitability or expectations. Portfolio holdings discussed are subject to change. There is no guarantee that in the future these securities will be held in Hensler accounts. As with all investments, there are associated inherent risks. Please obtain and review all financial material carefully before investing. Hensler is not licensed to offer or sell insurance products. This overview is not to be construed as an offer to purchase any insurance products.